You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
Welcome back, Roto Experts Weekend Morning Show. I'm George Kurtz here with the esteemed producer, Pete Considori. Mike Blewett is on his weekly mandated wee-wee break. I think he's an hour early today. Maybe daylight savings time is throwing him off a little bit. How you doing today, Pete?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
See, I like the way you emphasize the word fan and fantastic. I'm fantastic. So, today, Pete, for you, is today opening day or is tomorrow opening day?
Today's opening day, as a Yankee fan.
Yeah, I agree.
And we have games being played.
Oh, so we're all Yankee fans here.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if there's games being played, the season started. It's opening day.
I agree. I think the fact is that this is logical. It's a day game. It's opening. It's the opening game. It's a day game. Opening day. So are you gonna watch the Yankee game?
I will not because I will be here doing the show. I do the producers 1 to 3, and then when I get home, I will be watching WrestleMania tonight.
Ah, WrestleMania.
Yes. Something
I will not be. I'll be watching Walking Dead tonight. Actually, I got drafts tonight. I can't even watch Walking Dead tonight. Oh,
you got
man.
A busy night oh, I guess tonight.
I do have a busy night. Yes, I'm going to screw up both drafts by doing two at once. This will not work out well for me. But, Pete,
yeah.
Last week of the NHL season is this weekend. I guess, do you play in any head-to-head leagues?
I do. I do play to head-to-head leagues season long.
So, in your league, is today the last day, or are you counting the last week of the season?
I believe we're counting the last week of the season.
That would seem to insinuate that you're not in the finals, by the way.
Yes. I have not done well. I've been riddled by injuries. I just lost Tavares as well this week, so hasn't been good. Hasn't been a good season for me.
Yes, for those wondering, John Tavares is more than likely out for actually weeks, not just a week. He hurt his hamstring on Friday night against the Devils. I guess got his skate caught in a rut or the net behind the net, and didn't work out well for him. He will more than likely will not play this week, so you want to get him out of your lineup. So the question I was going to ask you, though, is would you prefer that we treat hockey like we do football? Well, we don't play week 17 in football. Do you think we should be doing the same thing for hockey, not playing the final week of the season because teams may rest their players?
Yes and no, and I'll tell you why. Yes, because you say teams will rest their players for the playoffs. However, if you have guys that are on teams that are not in the playoffs, they're probably looking to really produce because they want to either keep their jobs if, let's say, they're going to be a free agent the next year, or they want to keep certain teams out of the playoffs because we still have a lot of teams that are not clinched yet with a week left. So, you know, it's tough. Yes, you want to rest the players. You want to kill that week off because you're going to rest the good players that are going to be in the playoffs next week, but also, too, you're going to have those young kind of teams that are not in the playoffs wanting to squash any playoff chances for other teams. So I'm kind of 50-50 about it. I really, you know, I
hey,
care less either way.
George, can I ask you a question? Do you think it is as dire a situation in the NHL as it is in the NFL?
No, and I'm sort of hedging towards Pete. I could go either way with it, but I mean, there are several teams in the NHL that have nothing to play for. Pete's New York Rangers being one of them, and they have nothing to play for. This final week means nothing. You know, so the only thing that means that's important to the Rangers is getting Lundqvist figured out. Lundqvist has given up 13 goals and 3 losses since his return.
Yeah.
Hasn't looked great. Not all his fault, but hasn't looked great. So that's the only thing the Rangers have to play for here.
Why?
So no
why? Are they locked into? They're locked into a seed.
Yes.
They've been locked into a seed for months now. They're going to finish the first wild card seed. They're going to face Montreal. Minnesota's sort of landlocked. There's a couple other teams that are just landlocked where they are. Chicago. Nothing to play for here. So I get it. It's not like quite like the NFL because most teams are going to play at least 3 games this week, maybe 4, and they're going to play every game except maybe 1. Maybe they won't play on next Saturday or next Sunday when the season ends. So I get it. But, man, I mean, if I'm Pete and you're in a head-to-head league, I'd hate to lose my league because on that last week of the season, I needed a goalie win and the Chicago Blackhawks rested Crawford.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. My suggestion, I guess, to players, if they do have that last kind of week is to drop all those players from the playoffs and try to pick up some people from the waiver wire from teams that are not in it that have something.
Oh, that
to play
makes
for.
It worse. Now I can't even win with my best players.
No, I agree. It's a tough situation. It's tough.
Well, George, explain to me, because I know this is not necessarily fantasy-related, but explain to me how the NHL playoff system works now. It has obviously changed over the years. The Rangers are going to be fourth in the Metropolitan Division. They can't be overtaken by anybody on their side of the ledger, and it's very unlikely that anybody on the Atlantic Division could overtake them for points. So how does this work? They're the fourth team, but they have to play Montreal, who's the first team in the other division?
The NHL playoff system is idiotic. It really is. They've screwed this up so many times. It should just be 1-8. You know, the division winners get 1-2, and then you go on from there. Mm-hmm. But they decided that it's going to be top three in each division, and then the final two teams get wild card slots, regardless.
They have to play the first team in the opposite division.
No, not necessarily. They're going to finish seventh, so they're going to finish the number two seed. One plays eight. It makes sense that way. But what doesn't make sense is, let's say the Rangers beat Montreal in the first round of the playoffs. They have to stay in that division. They don't reseed.
It's so weird.
So the Rangers are in a great spot because you want to stay against the Atlantic Division. You don't want to go to the Metropolitan. You don't want to face Pittsburgh, Washington, Columbus. You want to face the Montreals, the Ottawas, the Boston, Torontos of the world. I'm not saying those are terrible teams, but they're not Pittsburgh, Washington, and Columbus, you know, who may be the top three teams in the East. So and the Rangers are going to get the easier draw. That's just the way it is. You know, the Rangers haven't been tanking. Lundqvist isn't playing like crap on purpose. You know, they're just not as good, quite as good as the other teams, but it's going to work out for the Rangers in the end.
Well, I'm going to be – my hockey appetite is going to be quenched, I suppose, this week, because I'm going to Chicago on Wednesday and watching the Frozen Four in United Center. Four teams that made it: Denver, the number one overall team in the country and the number one overall seed in that tournament, plays Notre Dame, who's kind of a surprise effort, which is interesting because it's in Chicago, and that's where Notre Dame's alumni fan base really emanates from. So the place will be rocking when Denver plays Notre Dame, and then the other game is Harvard against Minnesota Duluth, who won it in 2011. Those are top three seeds in Denver, Duluth, and Harvard, and then the fourth team is Notre Dame. And I can tell you this much, the NCAA was jonesing for Notre Dame to make it, and they did. They wanted, you know, you really only wanted two teams there, Notre Dame or North Dakota, because they travel so well. And it's going to happen. So I'm kind of fired up. Should be a fun atmosphere. I'll be going to the games on Thursday. Not going to stay around for the championship game, but I'll be there for a couple of days, and it should be a good time. Will you guys be watching that? I encourage you to tune in, because I think it'll be a fun atmosphere at the least on Thursday night.
I imagine with playoff, with hockey going on, baseball going on, it'll be at the bottom of my list of things to watch. I wouldn't mind. I'll catch some highlights at the very least, but there'll be too many other things going on for me to watch a college hockey game.
Wow. All right. Well, Pete, can I garner any support from you?
Yeah, I'll probably watch a little bit of it. Thursday night I have a hockey game myself, but it's a late night game, so I could probably catch the first couple periods of some games.
Yeah, there you go. So both games are Thursday night, and then championship game is Saturday. So that should be a good time. Well, there you go. See that? We're getting some hockey in there. Are you still predicting, George? I think you've been on the Caps bandwagon, which is kind of not been a popular bandwagon or a successful bandwagon over the course of time. So you still think they're going to pull it off?
I mean, this has to be the Caps year. It has to be.
They said that last year.
They're going to get hit hard in free agency. So if they don't win, you know, and maybe now or never for them. Pittsburgh's all banged up with injuries, so it's hard to predict them. I am going to predict them to make it out of the East, but I think the Blackhawks might still be the best team in hockey.
And Pete?
I agree with George. I do recall, and I kind of stick with this prediction, that I think the Stanley Cup is going to be Columbus and San Jose, even though the Blackhawks are so dominant. San Jose, I feel like, is hungry from last year. So, but George is right. If the Caps need to win this year, this is their year to win. And if they don't, they're probably not going to win for a very long time with the rebuild, a lot of free agency issues. So I can look. I think there's going to be a Metropolitan team in the Stanley Cup. It's not going to be in the Atlantic, I don't think. So Caps or Blue Jackets against either the Blackhawks or the Sharks.
All right. So we'll see how that continues to play out. I would say that for the rest of the show, we're trying to get some guests going here from the draft yesterday, the Grand Street Tavern draft, but it occurred in a bar, so we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen there. We'll see if we can get
somebody on. Trying to say they're still drinking?
I'm not
hungover.
I think it could
be 20 hours.
I think there could be a hangover
drunks
situation going there. I mean, the draft started at 10 a.m., so hopefully they weren't drinking at 10 a.m. But we had Tony Cincotta in there. We had Nando DeFino in there. We had Greg Sussman, Mike Cardano, who, George, he conceded yesterday that he would help us, allow us to help manage his team. He was playing a little bit of a shell game yesterday, saying he didn't know this and he didn't know that. But he hasn't told us who he drafted, so that's obviously a huge red flag.
Would you like me to tell you who he drafted?
Do you know?
Yeah, I know.
Oh.
He's at the beat angle. Yeah, I was able to get in. I sent you an email, Mike. You can check that out.
Okay, great.
He did say Chris Bryant first round, which I don't mind at all. I doubt I would have taken him fourth overall, but I have nothing against the pick. You know, and I think Tony said it perfectly yesterday. You can make an argument for anybody from 4 to 10, 4 to 12. They're all great players. Bryant, Harper, Altuve, Goldschmidt, Arenado, Donaldson, Machado. I don't mind any of these guys going there. So that none of this would have bothered me, taking him there. But he did. That's where he went there. And listen, Mike likes to play dumb. You know, he doesn't know what he's doing. Mike knows what he's doing. So I think we need to realize that too. Second round, he got Robinson Cano, and I love that pick. I think Robinson Cano is so I don't know what it is why people don't like him. I just don't get it. The only thing Robinson Cano doesn't do fantasy-wise is run. He does everything else. He's going to hit home runs, going to drive in a ton of runs in that lineup, going to hit for a good average. What else do you want from the guy? Yet he gets a lot of grief here, and I don't understand that at all. So I think he did very well there. And his third round pick was Strasburg, so he's got his ace there. If Strasburg stays healthy, he literally has his ace there. You know, that's the only question with Strasburg, just stay healthy. So I'm not going to go through his whole draft, but the first three picks I thought was extremely solid.
Okay, so we'll talk more about this because now I'm finding out for the first time what this team looks like. So we'll talk a little bit about that team and maybe a little bit more about that draft after the break. So it's Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Okay, so we are back. Talking a little bit about the Grand Street Tavern League, hosted by our friend and analyst during football season, Chris Vaccaro. So we had a good group of guys there yesterday. It was Scott Engel and Tony Cincotta. We'll Figure It Out is the team name for Nando DeFino and Greg Sussman. Beat Engel, I guess, is the team we're going to help Cardano with during the course of the year, George. And that is Mike Cardano. We had a few other guys there. Longtime listener Billy Hayes. Jerry Colvin participated in that. He's a fantasy expert in his own right. As well as a few other guys in there that we know. I think we had the Jersey Hitmen, probably sounds like the Benny Riccardi, Mike Florio team, but I could be wrong about that. I don't know which guys they were. Oh, the Holy Trinity, that's got to be them. It was Mike Florio, Benny Riccardi, and Joe Galina. Is that right?
I believe it is. Yeah.
That's got to be the Holy Trinity.
Wasn't Cha-Cha in there?
Yeah, that's right. I don't know. We had a whole bunch of experts yesterday on various teams, and they came up with funky names here, so we can't figure out who the hell is who. But in any event, Tony Cincotta picked third. He did go with Kershaw. This is a standard 5x5 league. It was a snake draft. So it went Trout 1, Betts 2, and Tony went with Kershaw 3rd. He didn't really necessarily tip his hand there, but he did say that he wouldn't have a problem taking Kershaw there.
He said he was taking Kershaw. All right, he came out and said it, so he did tip his hand. Yeah,
he did.
We all knew he was taking Kershaw.
So.
Good for him. I wouldn't have done that, but I have no problem. This one, I don't think that was a bad first round pick. You looking at it, Blackwood? No, all these picks were. No one went off the board here. You know, Kershaw's a first-round pick. I just prefer a hitter rather than a pitcher at that point. But I have no issues with it. You know, Bumgarner also went there. Syndergaard went there. Scherzer went eighth overall. So Billy Hayes has faith that Scherzer will be back to normal. And so do I.
True. This was a 15-team league. Pitchers that went, a bunch of pitchers, actually. So we saw, I mean, Kershaw and Scherzer goes 8, and Bumgarner goes 12, and Syndergaard goes 15. So can't really argue with any of that, although it's a little bit more than I've seen in other 15-team drafts for starting pitchers in the first round, George.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that 4 went out of 15, but I don't have a big issue with that. At 15, I think 3 would have been normal. You know, generally, Scherzer always goes around 12, and maybe Bumgarner would have gotten there around 15. So Syndergaard's sneaking in there at 15. But then again, I've been taking Syndergaard in the second round of every league I can if he's available at my pick there. Generally, it's been more around the 18 to 20 range, so it's only a bump up of a couple of picks. Not a big deal. Rizzo falling to 17 is probably the most interesting. Miggy at 16. Generally, those guys squeeze into the top 15.
Yeah, and Altuve goes 6, probably slightly later than you would see. I'm not going to parse the first round too much, but would you rather Mike Cardano have taken Bryce Harper instead of Chris Bryant at 4?
Nah, I'm good with either one. Like I said, I have no problem with the pick. I love Chris Bryant. You know, he has third base and outfield eligibility. That seemed to sway Mike. That wouldn't have swayed me, but I get it. If it's a tiebreaker for you, that's fine. That's what we use a tiebreaker for. I do think Bryce Harper bounces back. You know, so I would have no problem taking Harper at 3. You know, I'm not taking him above Betts, although I think I would in the end if he does have a better season than Betts, but I would have no problem taking Harper at 3. In the early draft, he was going around 9. So now we're seeing him bump up a little bit, as other people believe as well, that last year may have been more due to a shoulder injury than anything else.
Cheers. So down the rest of our team, we can drop it down. Yeah, team by team, we'll go, as you said, Beat Engel gets Robinson Cano. Love that pick at the end of the second round. The third round, as you said, Strasburg. Then we got Aroldis Chapman at the end of the fourth round.
Then he goes off the rails a little bit.
Do you have a problem with Chapman?
Yeah, there's a reason I stopped. There's a reason I stopped at round 3 when I was talking before. It goes off the rails a little bit for a while here, where Mike really has some explaining to do. Right. I don't really have a big problem with Chapman. Now, I don't believe
Jesus. He drafted Greinke in the fifth round.
Yeah, like I said, it gets worse, by the way. I don't believe in taking a close with that early, but it is a 15-team league, so my strategy would change a little bit. He took him at 59 overall, which is the equivalent of round 5, you know, round 6 in a 10-12 team league. So it's right in line with that. But I generally wait on closers. But in a 15-team league, you are doing yourself some good here. Yeah, you're taking a category where you know you're going to do pretty well in saves. You might even win saves here, especially if you back this up. This is my problem here. If I take Chapman in round 4, am I locked into taking another closer in round 7, round 8 just to lock up saves? And I don't want to do that. I want to put myself in that situation. I prefer to wait on a closer.
Okay, and then we get Zach Greinke in round 5, which George stated roughly 20 minutes ago that he would not take Zach Greinke in any league unless it was extreme value. This is not that extreme value, so we're going to have to live with
that's
that.
That's the problem.
Yeah, we're going to have to live with it.
Yeah, what do you mean we?
Good. I don't have to live help with him. This. All right, well, I'll help him.
I didn't put any money in this. I'll sleep just fine.
You can avow yourself.
He took him 64th overall. I mean,
come on, dude.
That's probably
what is up with the risky picks? The next pick is Matt Harvey.
As I said, it goes off the rails. All right, taking Greinke at 64th overall. You didn't have to do that. You're way overpaid for him. You could have waited another 4 or 5 rounds. And if someone else grabs him, fine, let him take him. Harvey, if I had to pick which pick I like better, I like the Harvey pick better. Obviously, you got him, I don't do the math here, round pick 80. So that's better. At least Harvey, I think, has some upside. You know, maybe he does become the Dark Knight. I don't think so. But there's no way you could take both these guys at the rounds you did. I mean, there are players you could have taken above Harvey that went after you. You could have backed up with those suit if you wanted to. I would have hated it, but you could have done that. Justin Upton, Chris Davis for some power, Salazar, another starter here. Bregman went next round. All these guys would have taken.
I mean, we're in round 6. You've said this number of times. In 15-team leagues, you need outfielders. You need to make sure you get some outfielders early. Through round 6, we don't have an outfielder yet. Round 7, yeah. Andrew Miller. which I'm okay with him as a player, but the way the team is building, I can't say I like it yet. We're in round 8. Dylan Betances is the team. Round 9, this is incredible, Brad Miller. We still
remember when I said Mike knows what he's doing a while back? Forget I said that. Pete, can you edit that out? Forget what I said. Mike knows what he's doing. This is
Julio Urias. We still don't have an outfielder. It's round 11. We're going to go with Yasmani.
Here's another problem. You don't even have a player in the major leagues right now. Urias in the minor leagues. That guy's not even going to help us.
Yeah.
Not until May, anyway.
Yasmani Tomas is the first outfielder taken by the Beat Angle team. That is round 11. That's brutal. Round 12, going down through this team, we see Yasmani Grandal. I'm okay with him at that stage of the draft. That's okay, but still, we're struggling. Cameron Rupp, so he takes 2 catchers in a row. Is that right? Yasmani Grandal at the end of the 12th, and then Cameron Rupp at the beginning of the 13th. So 2 catchers back-to-back. It's a 2-catcher league, so he felt like he needed to grab who was left, I suppose.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Still 1 outfielder. We're in round 14, and we're going to Rajai Davis. So right now, the starting outfield is Rajai Davis and the other guy that I just said a minute ago. I can't remember. Yasmani Tomas. Rajai Davis, 15, Yoan Moncada, another minor league player. So that's not great. 16, Drew Pomeranz, currently on the disabled list. George, what happened here?
Remember when I said yesterday that he'd be happy if he finished 14th and Scott finished 15th? This is what he's hoping for.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't broken down Scott's team yet.
As far as Pomeranz, by the way, Pomeranz is fine. He'll probably make his first start of the season next Sunday. A lot of teams are using this new 10-day DL to their advantage.
Yeah.
When you put a player on, he doesn't really miss that much time. So don't worry about Pomeranz. He is still expected to make his opening, his first start of the season, you know, 5th starter, next Sunday against Detroit.
I'm not necessarily worried about him now, but as you, I think you even said it yesterday, Pomeranz has a hard time getting through the season, period. So the Sox are bringing him along slowly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at Mike's entire team now. He's got 3 guys in the minor leagues, 2 guys on the DL, or will be on the DL. Joey Gallo, who will be in the minor leagues, hasn't been placed there yet. Carlos Rodon, who's hurt but isn't on the DL. Oh, my God.
Rodon is out until at least April 14th, according to this note. We keep going down through. Jason Kipnis, second base.
Another guy who's hurt.
At least April 13th, round 19. We still only have 2 outfielders, I believe. Michael Conforto, there's your 3rd outfielder. Mike being a Mets fan, he's in love with
Conforto.
Who could
be set down once Lagares comes
back?
Right.
That's right. Ron Lagares, Michael Conforto.
His outfield is Conforto, Roger Davis, Aaron Judge, Cameron Maben, Yasmani Tomas. Ouch.
Where did he get Judge?
His backup outfield
terrible.
Is Paulo Orlando.
Yikes. So
his outfield is horrible. I mean, it's horrible. His outfield's bad. This is a mono league.
Two very risky starting pitchers and a horrendous outfield. I mean, that is a horrendous outfield.
Well, when you're taking Betances and Andrew Miller, you're praying to protect your ratios. You're protecting ERA and whip because your saves are off the board here. You might finish last in this category as well. You only have 1 closer in Chapman. You know, other than you have 2 setup men. Miller at best will get 10 saves. Betances is really, they're not going to use him to to close very rarely. Urias,
he needs
to come back up quickly.
Are you surprised Aaron Judge lasted that late in a 15-team league? He's 22nd round. I know there's plenty of outfielders to go before him, but a guy with that kind of upside, I thought maybe he'd go a little bit earlier than that, especially considering who the hell else is on this team's outfield. He picked Conforto in
Yes,
front
I would
of Judge.
Agree. I'm surprised Judge would last that long. A lot of people don't believe. You know, just don't believe. Maybe they think the average is going to hurt you there. Or maybe they don't think he's going to have the job all season long. And I might agree with all of that, but there's no way I let him survive in a 15-team league to round 22. That's the equivalent of being almost a last-round pick in a 12-team league.
Man, I would imagine. You got a 3rd catcher here, Tom Murphy. Good times. 25 minutes. it's getting thin. Martin Prado here. Another guy's banged up. He's got a hamstring. He's expected to be out until at least May 1st. So there's one thing you really want to do late in a draft is take an aging player with an active hamstring injury. So we'll keep going down. Chris Devensky. This is all right. Obviously, we're getting pretty deep here because it's a 15-team league. Wilmer Flores, a bench guy here. We'll keep going down through R.A. Dickey. It's pretty late for R.A. Dickey. We might get some innings in there, but I don't know how it's going to protect your ratios. Tony took Sabathia in the 29th round. Tyson Ross, another player on the DL. Although, what is his expectation there, George? Expected to be out until at least May 1st. Tyson Ross.
He's going from the San Diego to Texas. I mean, if everything goes well, he's a placeholder. I don't see him doing any kind of damage in Texas.
And he skipped his final pick, so it's possible that it was in a bar and things got off the rails.
I'd be tricky if I had this team too. Be tricky heavily.
That's a brutal team. That's a brutal team. I'm surprised we attached ourselves. So of the $1,000,
what do you mean we? I said I'd help.
It might be we and me and Cardano. I think George is going to back out of this. I think I'm ready to back out of this, too, after seeing this draft. We should have shown up for this stupid thing so we didn't have the worst team. I'd be shocked if there's a worse team in this league. I give him credit for the Chris Bryant pick and maybe two or three after that. The Aaron Judge pick, probably the nicest value pick that I saw of everybody we went through. But we got injured players, arguably the worst outfield in the history of a 15-team snake draft, and starting pitchers with all kinds of question marks. He's going to feel like a genius if Harvey or Greinke works out, but it's unlikely that both of them work out, correct?
I think Harvey might be better than what we think. Even Greinke might as well. But my problem is not for the fact that, but you took him where you didn't need to take him. You could have waited rounds to grab probably a couple of rounds for Harvey and maybe double for Greinke. I just people were staying away from Greinke. You took him 64th overall. What did we talk about in the opening segment or two of the show? His ADP was 8-9. It was falling. So 8-9 means you take him at around 100. He took him 64th, and I would have waited to 120, 130 easily. Is Greinke someone you care about losing right now? I'm in a league with Mike Blewett. Mike Blewett grabs Greinke. Oh, good luck, Mike. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm not all crying because Mike Blewett grabbed Zach Greinke ahead of me. I'm okay with that. Matt Harvey, he did get up to 97 in his last start. He is pitching at Citi Field. Good pitchers ballpark. Mets, good team. So W's are going to be there. I don't think, Mike, I used to say that when Matt Harvey pitched, and I'm not a Met fan, but when Matt Harvey was pitching a couple of years ago, I thought he was must-watch TV because he was that good. I thought a no-hitter could be coming at any time.
I agree with
you. Those days are over. I think Syndergaard is really must-watch TV now. Yeah, but I think those days are over. But I do think Matt Harvey can come back to being a useful pitcher, fantasy-wise and for the Mets. I haven't given up on him yet. So I don't hate that pick. I only hate that you could have waited another round or two. But I don't hate it at all. I do think there's some upside there. But you can't take both back-to-back that early.
Yeah. Okay, we'll talk a little bit more about this draft, 15-team 5x5. Break down Tony Cincotta's team next on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Mike and George here. We're going to bring in Joe Lano in a minute. He participated in the 15-team Grand Street Tavern draft yesterday. He was the Jersey Hitman, George. So he's the guy that drafted that team, and we'll go over it here in a second. But we welcome to the program Joe Lano. Joe, how are you?
Very good, guys. Good morning. How are you?
Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it. So you're here with Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning. And yesterday we had Tony and Tony Cincotta and Mike Cardano on the show. And they were talking a little bit about draft strategies. Cardano seemed a little bit unprepared, and we were concerned because he was going to bring us in sort of as de facto co-owners of this team. After seeing his draft, we are... I would say anywhere from slightly discouraged to horrified with his team. So I don't know if that was the reaction in the room yesterday. Did they think he was off base? What was the reaction to Cardano's team? And was everybody in agreement that he had the worst roster?
No one really made comments on with worst roster or not, but the Matt Harvey pick got a lot of howls. I thought that was a little early. And then the Greinke pick also, the two that you touched on.
Yeah, yeah. So
the two biggest surprises.
Safe to say. So Jersey Hitmen, Joe, I'm going to go through your roster here a little bit. As far as what, and you picked where overall in the swing of things?
I had the 11th pick.
Okay, and you went with who in the first round?
First round, I won Manny Machado. I was a little surprised he fell that low, but very happy to take him.
Yeah, I'd be happy if I were you as well. So no arguments there from what you're able to do, and I'm looking at it now. You start off with Machado. You come right back with Carlos Correa. That's pretty damn good for the first 20 picks. Machado and Correa, I don't think anybody would argue with that success. And round three, you got to wait a little while here, and you go with John Lester. So, George, I'll throw it to you. Solid first three there. No arguments in those first three picks, right?
No arguments at all with the first three picks. I think Joe put it right. Manny Machado falling to number 11 is sort of a gift from God. And he actually didn't go top three in some drafts, so no issues there whatsoever. I think Joe did fine. And Joe, you got to be a little nervous here, Joe. We just pretty much lambasted our boss, so I'm getting fired tomorrow anyway. So I can say anything I want right about now and have nothing to worry about. I know what you're talking about, Mike. You're getting fired too.
let's talk a little bit about your team. So you end up with D. Gordon in the next pick, but I'll just break it down kind of position by position. You have Contreras and Martin at catcher, Hosmer and Marte at first, and you go D. Gordon's your second baseman. Your infield's pretty fantastic. Hosmer, Gordon, Machado, Correa. And then you go to your middle infielder. You have Arcia and Marte, Longoria as your corner infielder. So give me your thoughts there. Any players that clearly you're always going to love your team coming out of a draft, but players that you took amongst those that maybe you're a little weary of or you're willing to take a chance because you like the upside of the particular player as opposed to the safety of the player?
Well, the fact that I had Machado already, I was hedging on whether to take Longoria there, but in the ninth round, I just thought he was great value. He was really the best power hitter left on there. You know, I think he'd give me 30 home runs, possibly 100 RBIs. So I just jumped on him at that point. The thing you were talking about earlier, the pitching just went so early and so fast. I wasn't really prepared for that. I was kind of surprised. I ended up taking Lester in the third round, but you know, I got my third pick and they were already like 11 pitches off the board when it got to me. So I had to grab someone. I was happy to get Lester to anchor the staff.
Yeah,
and
George,
my outfield is a little bit weaker.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, my outfield is a little bit weaker, but you know, because the infield is so strong, I took the infielders earlier and then kind of filled in the outfield later on.
Souza, Chris Davis, Kepler, Cabrera, Lorenzo Cain, Perez, and Rosario is what you got there.
Yeah.
Okay. And your utility guy is Gordon. But here's his pitching staff, George, and pick it apart, if you will. And I would say, George, we have noticed that, especially in drafts containing a bunch of experts, we have seen pitching fly off the board. It's moving up and up and up, and making sure that you have some of these stud pitchers. So while Joe says he wasn't prepared, he does at least an admirable job of getting Lester there in the third round and locking in what we consider to be a surefire number one pitcher.
Yeah, I think when I look at the staff, I guess my first question to Joe is, I like Carlos Carrasco, but I am really worried about him this year. He got lit up in spring training. There's rumors that there might be an elbow injury here, although Cleveland keeps denying everything. How are you feeling about Carrasco? You mentioned pitching went early and often off the board. Did you want Carrasco, or was he sort of forced on you because pitching was flying off so quickly?
Yeah, I was happy to take him, but he was kind of forced. Like I said, a lot of guys were gone. I couldn't believe how fast they were gone. And even the closers, I really thought the pitching run was going to stop at some point. So I was taking the hitters while the pitchers coming off the board. I figured the pitching thing would slow down, and then I'd be able to get some good pitchers. But the pitchers just kept going and going deeper and deeper. Closers were, some of really low-tier closers were going in the mid-rounds. It was just surprising to me, and I just had these hitters on the board. I just kept taking them. And if I look back now, the one thing I would have done was try to get the pitching staff a little bit earlier, a little more secure.
George, on his pitching staff, Kevin Gausman is a name that we've seen kind of rising through up draft boards a little bit. He goes 9-12 last year, but people like the way he was throwing at points during the year. So do you expect him to kind of break out and bring in some bigger numbers here? Age 26 season, Kevin Gausman is a guy he has on his staff. Your thoughts there?
Yeah, I actually do like Kevin Gausman. I think he has good stuff, and Baltimore is praying that he can become an ace, because if not, that team's in a lot of trouble this year. They don't have any real pitching here. But I like Gausman as well. Depending on where he's going in drafts, he's somebody I am targeting. Now, I always worry about someone in the American League East. I mean, pitching your home games at Camden Yards, a lot of games in Yankee Stadium, Fenway, Sky Dome, whatever they're calling that ballpark nowadays. That's a lot of starts in pitchers and hitters' ballparks. So that concerns me somewhat, but Gausman has a good live arm. He sort of broke out last year. He really should have had better wins, but the team seemed to always decided not to hit during his start, so he goes unlucky there. But Gausman is someone I am targeting, and I do like this year.
And how about Joe, did you feel like you got scooped on any players early in the draft, somebody that you're really waiting on, or guys that you've been in love with this draft season that you maybe got scooped out from under you?
A couple of times it happened. It wasn't like a real big deal. Like I was ready to take Felix Hernandez at one point because he was still out there. I don't really know what to expect from him this year, but it was at a point where I thought, you know, he was worth it. I'm not really sure what round it was, but he went right before me. And when I took Guzman, I know the pitchers that went around him, like David Price went right before him, which I don't know what to expect from him. I don't think anyone does, when he's going to come back, how he's going to come back. And right after him, Dallas Keuchel went two picks after him. So that's the kind of pitchers that were left on the board at that point. We just, like I said, if I got scooped anywhere, it was the pitchers. But I really, like I've had those first two picks that I really didn't feel I could pass up on, Machado and Carrera. And by the time it got back to me, it was Lester was left, and then I should have just maybe wanted another pitcher right after him. As far as just getting scooped, not really, because I was kind of prepared. I had all different ways I was going to try to go.
Well, I'll give you this, Joe. We've broken down two rosters. You're in the lead. We've broken down your roster.
I feel really good now, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. But, George, a couple other players on his pitching staff. Sean Manea, his age 25 season, as we see him last year, 7-9, 3.86 ERA, through 144 innings, but 124 strikeouts. So he obviously has that ability. What are your thoughts on Sean Manea this year? It looks like he got him pretty late, so it might be a decent value here.
Yeah. First of all, don't be surprised, anybody, if I'm hosting the show from 8:45 on. Sean Manea, I mean, he has some upside. I mean, when you're talking about Oakland, W's are going to be tough to come by, not the greatest team here, but he's a top prospect there. I think he will do some damage, and the value is right for Manea. I mean, it's a 15-team league. So a pitcher, we start nine pitchers. You can do the math. There's 135 pitchers need to be started. We're not all going to get stars here. So that's not going to happen. Joe mentioned that pitching went early and often in this league. People were already stocking up on it for whatever reason that might be. And I don't blame him. We've seen that before. So I do like Manea. I don't expect magical numbers, not a Cy Young career coming out of him, but a solid placeholder for this season with upside for future years. In other words, I would like him better in a keeper or a dynasty league than a redraft.
And his outfield, just to go over that again, we got Souza, Davis, Kepler, Cabrera, Kane, Perez, Rosario. Obviously, you don't need to say anything about Cabrera, but how about the rest? Souza, Davis, Kepler, Kane, Perez, Rosario. Thoughts on those guys?
Well, with Crush Davis, he's got the power there. Davis was really a surprise home run leader last year. So that, and I think he'll continue to do that again. That's what he does. Kepler, that's going to be the key to this team. Can Kepler be that breakout star this year that we've been waiting for? Lorenzo Cain is underrated. I don't know why he's falling in certain drafts. He's not fantastic, but he's a solid outfielder too. Gives you a combination of everything. Yes, the power's not going to be tremendous there, not in Kauffman Stadium. So that's just the way it is. And Melky, you know, outfielder three, outfielder four, he is what he is.
Yeah, I mean, George, I guess the one thing I would say on Kane is that, you know, he got hurt a bunch last year. So the stats dropped off from 2015 to 2016. 2015 was a tremendous year for him, obviously. He stole 28 bases, hit 16 homers, hit .307. He finished third in the MVP race. So, you know, in your sort of in your world, and something that you've referenced a bunch of times, you want to see a guy do it again. And you could argue that his 2014 and 2015 was proof that he could do it on a consistent basis. But now that he's going to be 31 years old, coming off a season that was pretty disappointing due to injury and due to stats, maybe Keane isn't the player that he was a couple of years ago. Maybe people just don't believe it.
Yeah, and I get that. And Kane is somebody who baseball does not come naturally to. He reminds me of Bernie Williams. You know, there are people who are born to play the game, people who have just figured it out late. Hey, I can play the game, but it doesn't come naturally to them. And Kane falls to that latter category, which is sometimes why he's not very fluid. And sometimes I do worry about him going through periods where it's just not going to look good in baseball. But overall, I'm not worried about it. I think he'll be fine. He's not going to be Trout. He's not going to be a superstar or anybody like that. But he's not going to be someone who's going to fall off the planet either. And I do like the sort of power-speed combo he can give me. When I look at the Kane, he's not the player I'd worry about on this team. I think he'll be fine. I don't think he'll be the player on Joe's team that's going to cost him a championship in the end.
So, Joe, last thoughts on your squad. How did you feel like you stacked up against some of the other teams? And was there somebody that you feel like kind of dominated the draft and did a really nice job that you were like, man, I'm going to have to be chasing this guy down the rest of the year?
Well, I'm fairly happy with it. Pitching, hopefully there'll be some guys that I'll pick up on the waiver wire that'll help out more. I mean, you know, closer is so volatile. Hopefully I'll be able to pick up someone there. No, I really felt dominated draft. I really didn't examine every team like the way your guys are breaking everything down. I didn't really look at everybody's team, so I don't really know who's who yet. You know, it just happened yesterday. It was a long day. We were there at 10 o'clock in the morning. The draft ended around 3:45. So it was a very long day there. Just a big shout out though to Chris Vaccaro.
To 4:15.
Man, that's a long draft. Yeah.
Chris Vaccaro put out some food for us, too. He put out some wings and sliders, and it was a real nice time. Real good guy, real nice place. Thank you for hosting it.
Yeah, Vaccaro's
a
man.
It was a long day.
Yeah, that's a really legitimately long draft, nearly 6 hours. So good job by Vaccaro. Good job by you, Joe. Thanks for joining us today. Good luck this season. We're going to follow this league throughout the year. I don't know that we're going to be able to help our compadre, Mike Cardano, but we're going to do our best and try and chase some people down. So good luck this season, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys. And just real quick, George, you and I worked together on the Seamheads fantasy podcast about 5-6 years ago.
Yes, that's right. Seamheads. Okay, I remember that now. Georgia, I remember the name of Jersey Hitman. I knew we worked together somewhere.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
Thanks, Joe. Take care. So, all right, we'll keep talking about this draft and try and clean up and evaluate some other teams in this draft. So it's Mike and George until 10 o'clock on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Okay, back and in the mix with the Greenwich Street Tavern, hosted by Chris Vaccaro, our colleague yesterday. Chris joins us during NFL game days, plays in a lot of high-stakes leagues over the course of the year, football, baseball. I don't know if I think he might have competed in this league yesterday. There's a team called GST, so I think that might be his team there, George. And we'll take a look at his team in a minute. But I started to talk about Tony Sincotta's team, so I'll stick with that for now. Then go over Engel's team, take a look at some of this. So first I'll go to the draft and a little bit of how he started out. And Tony, as he did say yesterday, you're right, I just recalled, as George reminded me, that he called his shot on Kershaw at number 3. Trout, Betts, then Kershaw goes number 3. And he had to wait a while until he picked up Corey Seager. Corey Seager, I just got my ESPN The Magazine yesterday in the mail, which I actually, got to be honest, I don't read very often. I just get it because I think I have the insider access there, so I just get it. I don't read it often, but Corey Seager is the cover boy for the MLB sort of season opening day issue.
Woohoo!
I'm just saying, what are your thoughts on Corey Seager?
Oh, not the fact that he's on the cover boy?
No, who cares about
Sports
that?
Sports Illustrated jinx
it's
or whatever.
It's interesting that they... No, I don't care about the jinx. It's just, I think they're saying that. I think the title was that he's the new classic. I think kind of projecting that he's going to be the next superstar. I think some people concur that Corey Seager is going to be in that world. But how do you expect Corey Seager to sort of come off his great 2016 season into 2017?
Well, I think he's one of the leaders of the excuse me, of the shortstops of today. I think this is the best group of shortstops we've ever had. And by we, I mean Major League Baseball. I mean, there is just so many top-of-the-line great shortstops in this day and age. They had Seager, Alexander Bogarts, Trevor Story. You can go on. There's three or four other guys here. You can Addison Russell is in this group here. It's fun to watch, great to watch. I think he's going to be a great player. And he does all this damage in Chavez Ravine. And not exactly a hitter's ballpark. He's not doing this in Colorado. He's not doing this in Fenway. Yeah, he's doing this in a good pitcher's ballpark there. So yes, I'm a big Corey Seager fan, and I have no doubt that he continues this. If not, I think he'll get even slightly better.
If you're in a dynasty league right now, starting today, who is the shortstop that you're taking? First, would you take Correa over Seager?
Would I take Correa over Seager? Manny Machado doesn't apply at shortstop.
No, I'll say no. For the purposes of this argument.
Okay, say no. For the purposes, I will take Correa over Seager. Yes, only because the ball. I'm going to play how the ballpark factor play a little bit there. Better hitting team in Houston. It's close. It's really nitpicking here, but I'll take Correa slightly over Seager.
So that's 1-2, right? Because you got other guys like Turner can apply here. You got Lindor, Story, Bogart, Segura, Nunez.
Yeah, that's 1-2. That's 1-2, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
Lindor would be three for me. I think Villar is in this conversation as well. If he can have another year like last year, that power and speed combo.
Yeah. You know, you got Bogarts. You said Addison Russell, obviously, who hasn't put up the numbers just yet, but, you know, a really young player. So
I think this is the year for him.
Yeah, yeah. And I had Addison Russell on my keeper team last year, which I'm no longer part of that league, but he was a guy that, despite some struggles.
What happened there, Mike?
Yeah, it's a long story that I don't need to get into again. But anyway, Corey Seager doesn't turn 23 until later this month. So based on last year where he hit 26 homers, it's 22 years old, 26 homers, 308, 877 OPS. He obviously won the Rookie of the Year, his top three in MVP. He played 157 games, so that's kind of impressive too, right? He went through a full major league grind at short and was in a top three in the MVP voting. That's kind of the most impressive part when you put all the numbers together. He got through the entire grind, barely missing any games.
Yeah, I mean, these kids are doing it at such a young age. And it makes you wonder, Mike, 15 years down the line, 17 years, the numbers they might put up. You know, that overwhelming career numbers. I just wonder what it's like, what it's going to be if they keep up the, you know, this career arc they're going on. And if they play a long time, they stay healthy. You know, it's very curious because they're doing it at such a young age here. I think it's an exciting time for baseball. Because I mentioned, you know, there are guys we didn't even name here. You know, I said Machado, Correa, Lindor, Seager, Villar, Bogart, Story. Segura might be in this list too. We sort of forget about him. Russell, you know, this is a fan. I mean, if Javier Baez ever gets a full-time job somewhere, he'll be mentioned in this list because he's that good a player as well.
And we didn't even mention Dansby Swanson, who we know may not be the might not be an overwhelming fantasy player, but you've made the comparison, and we've made the comparison before, that this could be a future Jeter-type player. I'm not putting that kind of comparison on him, but he could be a really excellent baseball player for a really long period of time, and the Braves have to love him being in the middle of it.
Yeah, I think when we say he could be a geotype, we're saying that he could be a better real-life player than fantasy player. Jeter was always somebody, you know, he put up very good baseball numbers, but didn't excel in any one fantasy category. And that's what we're going here with Swanson. It's certainly not a swipe at anybody. They're both very good players.
Yeah, of course. We'll talk more about Tony's team in the next hour. I want to take some time to break it down because he's got some players that we really like. Forget Seager being, you know, a top draft pick, but he obviously went Kershaw. Then he got Seager in the second round. His third pick was Will Myers. So it is a 15-team league, but Tony was on our program last week talking about Will Myers, and he's like, he likes the fact that Will Myers came out and said he's going to be a 40-40 guy. He'll chase stats all day long, and Will Myers is on his third team in his career, and people may not love him being in the clubhouse, but for fantasy purposes, we're good with Will Myers.
Yeah, I mean, I have no problem with Will Myers as well. He might give you that dual eligibility maybe a little bit. I might worry a little bit about the power. I worry about the team. That's a terrible team. I mean, my God. I've been making fun of the Reds. Forget about it. The Padres are going to be a joke. That pitching staff is just horrendous here. But overall, Will Myers, I think he's the definition of a player. So much was expected of him right away. You know, everything got traded from KC. It didn't happen in Tampa. Got traded again. It's taken him a few years to catch on. Not everyone figures it out at 22 years old. Some places it does take longer to figure out baseball. It's a hard game. And I think now he's just coming into his zone, maybe getting comfortable with everything that's happened to him. I think, once again, he'll be fine as well. I have no problem with Will Myers where he was drafted.
Yeah, 28 and 28 last year. We could see him get right past 30-30, despite it being a bad lineup around him. Will Myers is going to have a shot to play every day yet again. It's 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. We're going to keep breaking down this Grandin Street Tavern draft. Maybe we'll get Mike Cardano on the phone and find out what happened. It's Mike and George back after the break.